Welcome to Extraordinary Entrepreneur Radio, where we discuss the messy behind the scenes of entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Maggie Isley, and today's episode is actually a recording from a session in my Facebook group. So my Facebook group is called the Extraordinary Entrepreneur Collective, and you're welcome to join. It is a group of amazing humans, and our guest today is Emilio Osorio. He is amazing, and he will be talking about mindset, and then we go into a conversation about leadership. So without further ado, here we go.
All right, so we're live, and just so you know, Emilio, there is a 20-second or so lag between comments by the time we see them. So it drives me crazy, but we'll be good. That's so right. Hello, everybody. I, of course, am your host, Maggie. I'm always here. And with me, I have Emilio. We're talking leadership. Emilio, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name's Emilio Osorio, CEO of Quantum Level Leader, where we focus on helping leaders level up their leadership skills in their business. So I'm excited to talk to you all today. We got a great show lined up, so I'm ready to get started when you are.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. We were actually almost late because we have been talking for like 15 minutes. It's been so good. Yes. So good. So let's get started. I was telling him, oh, Kristen's here, Trisha's here, Esty's here. So I was telling Emilio that we were talking about imposter syndrome on Friday. And he has some mindset challenges for you guys. So let's talk.
All right.
Take it away.
All right. So imposter syndrome. Oof. This is a devil that I'm familiar with and, you know, have to fight with almost every day. Even, you know, my level of business, I've been doing this kind of work almost 14 years now. I've been in various leadership roles for about 20 years, but every new level has a new devil, they say. So you're always kind of battling this. Now, imposter syndrome, from a mindset perspective, is really kind of feeling like you're not the right person to be in those shoes, right? And we've all been there and we kind of battle this all the time. But whatever archetype you fit for imposter syndrome and what challenges it brings up for you, really, there's a simple principle that can help you manage whatever archetype you're in. And that's that you need to start before you're ready. That's really, you know, the man behind the curtain for imposter syndrome, right? We want it to be a certain way, but really what we're doing is we're chasing the feeling of readiness, right? But that feeling of readiness is really all in our heads, right? There's nothing outside of yourself that's going to make you feel ready. So you just have to start and do it. And the reason why is because clarity comes from action, not thought, right? Because we can sit there all day and think about it and try and get it just right. But there's always going to be something at the end of the day. But what we need to do is focus on taking action, because that is what's going to bring clarity. You try something, doesn't work. You analyze it, look where the errors were, the issues came up, and then you go and you try again. And I always give the example of philosophers, right? So philosophy is great. I love philosophy. But the greatest lesson philosophers ever learned or uncovered was that they knew nothing, right? So from So from a practical perspective, thinking about it is not going to get you there. It's really about taking action. So what I'd like to do with this imposter syndrome is talk about some mindset challenges that come up and the principles that go along with them, because this is going to help you overcome that imposter syndrome. And also when you're working with your team or working with your clients, you're going to see in some way, shape, or form, these mindset challenges are going to come up, and this is going to equip you on how to deal with them. So we talked about imposter syndrome as starting before you're ready. The second devil that may come up is procrastination.
Oh, can I get an amen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Give me, hello, Lisa. Give me an amen in the comments. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Procrastination is a big one. And I liken procrastination to a Band-Aid, right? You're just like,
Just do it.
It's just do it. It's going to suck. It may hurt a little bit, but you know what? At the end of the day, you just have to get the thing done. So for procrastination, it's the concept of sell it before you make it, right? So procrastination for me is another form of that perfectionist kind of activity, yes. right? It's, you know, you just want, again, something to be just right. And it's keeping you from doing something. Fear may come up and other things. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But really, it's about getting out there and pushing it before it's done. That concept of sell it before you make it comes from like the course creation world. You don't want to spend all this time creating a course to find out that it just falls flat. So you want to have some sales in the pipeline before you even start making it. So mm-hmm. for procrastination, I would say the same principle applies. The next one is self-sabotage, right? We start getting some momentum and yep. then for some reason we just backslide. It's like, oh my God, I was doing so good. I had the momentum I needed and just, why do I keep doing this to myself? So the first thing with self-sabotage that we need to understand is that it's us defaulting back to our comfort zone. That's mm-hmm. all it is, because we're comfortable with a certain set of activities and habits and behaviors. And if we want to change what we're doing, and this is especially true in leadership, because you're going to find the people you're leading are going to self-sabotage also. We need to understand this is people reverting back to their comfort zone. So to combat self-sabotage is really understanding that done is better than perfect.
Absolutely.
We're going to backslide, but get back on the horse and keep going. That's what it's all about. That's right there.
Round of applause.
Yes, these are huge. So the next one here is comparisonism. Right. Comparisonism. So there's an old saying, I forget who said it, but comparison is the thief of all joy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we can compare ourselves to other people all day long. And you know what? There's really nothing wrong with it if it's used to push you ahead and move your vision and agenda forward. But when it starts becoming a problem is when you start kind of feeling a little crappy about yourself and looking at the progress you've made is like, that's not like this person. What we're doing really is we're comparing our chapter 2 to somebody else's chapter 20. And I'm sure you've heard this before in some way, shape, or form, right? It's a kind of common analogy, you know, but the principle here for comparisonism is that success rewards speed. It's not about where you are, where a person is. It has nothing to do with that. What success rewards is the person who gets that message out first, regardless if it's perfect, if there are typos in it, if it may not be to the caliber that you like. Really, it's about speed. The faster you can get it done, the faster you'll get the feedback that you need to make the changes you make. And actually, you'll be ahead. Failing faster is the path to succeeding more. Right. So just keep that in mind.
I love that. That is so smart. Say that again for the people in the back. So failing faster.
Failing faster is the path to succeeding more.
That's good.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I mean, we got to fail fast, man. We'll talk about failure on the next one, which is fear. Yeah. This is a big one. Fear. Fear is an acronym. False evidence appearing real. You may have heard it some way, shape, or form, but it is just an acronym. It's you're looking at something and it's giving you some kind of evidence and it's triggering your response, right? But what you need to understand is that you're really failing two things. Failing, you're fearing the failure and you're fearing the success. So fear of failure is easy, right? We don't want to feel the pain of, oh my God, I tried something and it didn't work. But like I was just saying before, failing fast is the pathway to success. It leads to more success. So failure, all it is really is feedback. It's just telling you what worked, what didn't work, and where you need to focus your energy on. So you could really use that and gain some more momentum as you go.
Yeah.
And fear, the important thing to learn is that, again, it takes those two roads. I'll talk about fear of success in a minute. But fear, if you think about it, you're walking down the road of fear and it comes to a fork in the road. Are you going to forget everything and run or face everything and rise? So those are the two paths you could take for fear. Now, fear of success is an interesting one because people are like, well, I want to succeed. Like, what do you mean? Well, it's really about having a fear of being seen.
Mm-hmm. Visibility. Right?
It's visibility, and it can trigger that imposter syndrome a little bit because, oh my God, what are my family and friends going to think when they see me out here trying to be this successful person, but they know all of my dirty secrets, right? So that's kind of how fear of success comes up, is you don't want to be seen as an imposter, that person who thinks they're all that.
That's true. Oh, I love this. Emilio. Yeah.
Awesome.
Sorry, everybody else. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So if anybody has any questions as I go, please drop them in. I'm just going through this fast because we have a couple of topics to go through. Make sure we give you guys a lot of value. So again, any questions, drop them in the chat box there.
Esty did have a quick question.
Sure.
She just wondered if you could speak to product-based business at all.
Sure. From the
failing fast.
Aspect. Oh, failing fast. Yeah, absolutely. So product-based businesses, I'm a huge fan of beta testing. Right. So my background, in terms of working with products, I like focus groups. I like sending out samples and things like that. So if you have focus groups or target demographics from people who would normally buy your products, have them test it out. Bring them together in like an interview and a Zoom call and ask them some questions about the product. This works good for marketing or anything like that. But that's what I would say is, test it out, test out the products before you go to launch and prototype it, meaning it's the bare bones. And that information you're going to get is going to be extremely helpful later on. But either way, you want to at least have some sales before you sell it, before you mass produce it. So if you're, let's see. It's an example. So for products, let's say it's clothing, right? So a lot of times it's not so much the quality of the clothing that sells as the marketing around it, mm-hmm. right? So what would best suit you is to test the marketing around the actual clothing than the product itself. And if you're white labeling, let's say like you're white labeling, skincare products or anything like that. If the product has already been tested as safe, then I would say the same thing. Test the marketing first and test it with a small segment and try and sell a bit of it. And your sales are going to be a good indicator to let you know, okay, this is a good one to produce it. If you find that sales fall flat, you may have to go back and look at your marketing a little bit. Does that answer your question? That was a little lag.
I think so. And then she does enamel pins. So okay. What do you think of Kickstarter for her?
Kickstarter is great. Kickstarter is great.
Because that would be a way to validate your idea before you actually go to, because she does have products. I actually have them here. They're amazing and they are selling, but right. Like for her new ideas.
Yeah.
What Kickstarter?
Yeah, Kickstarter is a great, great tool to do it and to do those little market segments. Again, it's just back to the original branding point. It's, you want to make sure you have market product fit. So the more you can test and fail in those tests, then the quicker you'll get to success. And it's really, again, if your products are great, it really comes down to how you're marketing it and is it speaking to your target audience?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The marketing is huge because you can have the best product in the world, but if nobody can find you, it doesn't matter.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, cool. Let's keep going. And I'll let you know. I'll keep an eye on questions. You just keep rolling and I'll let you know when we need to address.
All right. Perfect. All right. So I got five more to go through. Let's do these quickly. So the next one is infobesity. All right. So this is a term I got from a coach of mine. And
I was going to say, I love that.
Yeah. It's, we're in the information era and we're bombarded with information. So it's important that we consciously consume information that's going to further our vision. Everything else is a distraction until your priority changes. Then you shift what you're consuming. But when you do this, you're going to find you have a lot more freedom and creativity to actually think and come up with new ideas. So with infobesity, really, again, what I would say, conscious consumption is the principle you want to employ. The next one is perfectionism, which we've talked about. So again, this is really just trying to feel like I'm ready to do this and you need all the details in place. But again, starting before you're ready, just like we were saying with the imposter syndrome, is the same principle I would apply here. Also with perfectionism, it's another angle you could look at it, and that's in terms of transformation. So the transformation begins before the transaction. So think of it when you're marketing a product, when you're selling a service. The transformation for the consumer occurs before they spend one penny on you. And that's how we got to look at it. So for me, I sell high-ticket products, right? High-ticket coaching and consulting. So in doing that, I have to make sure that I'm giving my clients enough of a transformation before they invest dollars into me so they can know, like, and trust me.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So when we look at perfectionism, we have to step out of our own shoes or take a, what I call a strategic step back and step into the shoes of your client. So this is when empathy is going to be huge. Right. So you have to understand who they are and what transformation they need from you so that they can begin to spend their dollars and invest into you. Now, the next one is shiny object syndrome. All right. So,
Hi, my name is Maggie. I was a long time sufferer of shiny object syndrome. That was
Absolutely. That was me too. I was one of those people who suffered from shiny object and infobesity, buying course after course, reading book after book, and looking for that right answer. And it's like,
oh, that special key. Like, yeah. Where is it?
It's like, if I just got that key, I'd be great. But here's the thing. The grass isn't greener on the other side. It's greener where you water it.
Yeah.
Right, so that one, again, it's clarity comes from action, not thought. This shiny object syndrome is you looking for clarity somewhere. You're digging for gold in different spots where you haven't dug deep enough in one spot. So you have to take enough action, fail enough time so that clarity will come. The next one is self-doubt. So self-doubt is similar to imposter syndrome, but is more beginning to doubt your ability because maybe you're not making enough sales. You're not as far along as you'd like to be. So just begin to doubt who you are in this whole process, if you've made the right decisions, all of this. So the principle for that is get paid to practice, right? So self-doubt is not about combating self-doubt is not about having that perfect product, that key insight. It's about taking the physician approach, right? What do doctors do? They practice medicine and they get paid to practice. So you should be getting paid to practice. And the more you get into that mindset, the less doubt you have in yourself, because it's really not about you. It's about serving your client. So when you get paid to practice, you're like, okay, well, I'm smart enough to figure it out. I'm good enough where failure doesn't define my success. So let me just keep going. So doing this or applying this principle is going to help with that one huge. Last one is your ego. All right. So ego is another one. It cuts us two ways. All right. So we can start having some success and be like, I don't need any more coaching. I don't need guidance. Yeah, I got this.
Don't worry about me.
Exactly. And the second you start doing that, you stop learning, right? Certainty is the enemy to learning. It's about staying curious, right? And this is the basis to a lot of what I do when I coach executives and C-suite leaders. It's about staying curious. Your experience and your degrees mean nothing. It's not about qualification at one point, right? Because you do have to be qualified to do certain things. So I'm not saying you don't need it. But what I mean is that you're never too qualified or too experienced to be checked or to have more blind spots shown to you. And you're never too old to have a goal. When you stop having a goal, you're going to find your performance is going to dip and you're not going to be able to accomplish at the speed you used to. So what I would say with egos is to create boundaries around your barriers. So, for example, you have inherent boundaries, which are like your blind spots and, you know, things that you just don't see outside of your worldview. So you need people around you who can check you and show you things that maybe you're not seeing. And the next is your time boundary, right? So your ego, usually when it starts to run away from you, you start letting your processes go and aren't as tight with what you need because you feel like, oh, I'm there already. So if you make your calendar your boss, you'll find you'll keep that part of your ego in check. So protect your time strictly, especially from yourself. The second way your ego cuts you is, you know, going back to the comparisonism, perfectionism, all these things. It's your ego can replay a story from some evidence that you experienced years ago and haven't dealt with. So it's important, again, you use those boundaries to help keep your ego from backsliding too far. So those are my top 10 mindset challenges and the principles to deal with them. So I hope that was valuable.
That was so good. Like, good. So good. So good. So in the comments, let us know which ones you relate to. Like, and it can be all 10, because I know obesity and shiny object syndrome. Oh my gosh, I should get those tattooed on, one on each wrist right next to my punctuation, because hello. So good. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
Good. Glad
it was. Okay. Yeah. So we're good in the comments. We don't have any questions, except that we do have requests for your acronyms for fear. Oh, sure. Because they are so good.
Sure. So I'll give the first one. So fear is false evidence appearing real, right?
So good. False evidence appearing real.
There you go. Second one is when you're walking down the road of fear, you're going to come to a fork in the road. So you can either forget everything and run, or face everything and rise. So those are the two roads. Absolutely.
So good.
Yeah. And I'll give you one more bonus acronym for fail. Fail is first attempt in learning. First attempt in learning. So you want to fail fast.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. And our topic today is leadership, but we started off with a mindset check, because everything stems from your mindset. Without a solid mindset, nothing else is going to work. So
there you go.
What does it matter? All right. Awesome. So moving along. Oh my God, that was so good. Awesome. So What do we have as our next? We actually talked beforehand, because I have a couple questions that you guys have been asking me in DMs, and I'm like, well, I don't know. So I asked Emilio, because that's what I do. When I don't know, I don't pretend to know. I just ask people who do know.
Love that.
Because that's what we do. That's what people, that's what experts do, is they don't pretend to know everything. They don't try to learn everything. They simply go to the people who do.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of these mindset issues, that's what people, that's what their knee jerk reaction is, right? Because they don't want to appear, you know, like they don't know, because somehow that kind of impacts their brand negatively, right? But, you know, honestly, I mean, think about your experience when you've ever run into this know-it-all person. They sound like they're kind of full of it, don't they? They sound like really fake. It's like, oh, okay, you know, oh, okay, no problem.
Oh, it's you know? Oh, you know that too? That's interesting. I'm guessing everything you do is at about 25%, because there's no way you know everything.
There's no way.
So yeah. So that is one of the things that we were actually talking about was we were bringing you on about leadership. So a lot of the people in our group, they don't have teams yet. So some people do, some people don't. But for the people who don't, can you tell us a little about when we know it's time to hire, when it's like, when you're just doing too much? Because that's exactly it, right? Like, you don't know the answer, and you're like, oh, I guess I'll just go into infobesity mode and learn all the things and figure it out. Like, when should we be looking at bringing on team members?
It's a good question. And I'll tell you, I'm guilty of it myself. I'm a recovering overachiever. A high performer, and you know, overachievers have the same problem. It's like we feel it's all on us, right? But as soon as we start to feel overwhelmed, and as soon as we can afford it, we should hire someone. And the first position you should hire really depends on your greatest need and your zone of genius, right? So for me, the first hire that I had was a virtual assistant, because my zone of genius is on building, right? I'm a huge builder. So if I'm not building, I'm not in my happy place, right? So anything that takes me outside of that, I try and hire for it. So it depends on who you are and what you like. If you're a systems person and you like building the infrastructure of the business, but let's say you hate sales, then sales would be the first person that you would hire. If you know you are a creator like me, but you don't like the minutia, you would hire a virtual assistant. If you hate marketing, you know, or writing copy, for example, then a copywriter would be one of the first. You know, and there are different ways to go about hiring your first few people. I like to look at it as your dream team, right? And you need to have your dream team there at least written out, so you know what order or who you're going to hire as you go. And it may change as your business grows and changes. But, you know, you want to make sure that you have your, see, he's getting excited about the information.
He's like, I love dream teams. He's like, mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to keep an eye first and foremost on your finances. You know, and for a lot of us run small businesses, sometimes just having a little QuickBooks account, and if you have a really small team, that may be enough. You can have your finances in order. You also want to make sure you have your operations in order, right? You have everything processed out and you have your eye on that and you're continuously improving your processes. You also want to have your sales and marketing nailed down. You want to have your product creation down. You know, so these are just four areas I'll give you that are kind of general. There are other things to look at, but you could start basically with those four. And from there, you can determine what are your zones of genius, what are you okay doing, and what are you comfortable handing off. You know, you also want to make sure that you can afford the type of hire that you're looking for. So most things, like for a VA, I mean, they're relatively inexpensive nowadays. So you could find someone good for an affordable price. But for things like marketing, design, you can go to a student. And if you have an LLC, you can offer them an exchange of study credits for fulfilling a contract for you. And I'm a huge fan of this. I use interns a lot for
I have two interns.
There you go. Yeah. You know, and it's the way to go. I mean, it doesn't hurt your pocket. But the thing is, the challenge that comes up with interns is that when they leave, the magic kind of leaves with them. So this is when systems are so critical. You and I were talking about this before, Maggie, about how having processes and procedures are so important, because that's how you begin to duplicate your magic, if that makes sense.
You need to have that process in place, because otherwise you start at zero every single time.
Absolutely.
And that's unacceptable. Oh my gosh. No.
Yeah. And even when you're saving money, you're paying with your ultimate resource, which is your time. You can never get that back. So
Yeah. And inside, obviously, my pitch, inside the entrepreneur experience, the extraordinary entrepreneur experience, I'll help you. And you can actually bring, I haven't said this on any of our videos, but I have told inside the DMs, you bring one person with you. So if you have a marketing person or a VA, you bring them with you inside. Mm-hmm. But it does need to be an employee, but you bring them with you, or a contractor, you bring them with you. So
absolutely.
You bring them with you. You need to teach the somebody else your marketing. So you bring them with you. So that way you have that foundation. But yeah, so assuming you already have a team, right? How do you pivot that thinking? Because I had somebody say, and I'm not calling anybody out, so please don't feel called out, but I had somebody say to me, well, my biggest expense is my team. And no, that's the biggest investment you've made in your business, because without a team, it's really hard to grow and to scale and to do all the things so that way you can focus on your zone of genius, right? Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the best way to pivot your thinking into viewing onboarding and viewing growing as an investment?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I would say without a team, there is no dream. The dream stays a dream without a team. That's the truth. You know, there's no, and I don't know what your aspirations are out there in terms of, you know, financial goals and things like that, but there's no millionaire out there who got that way without one. You know, you need a team in order to be able to execute effectively, because if you are the CEO of your business, you need to be a CEO, which means you need to keep your eye on bringing in more business, on the future, on innovation, because without keeping your eye on these things, you're going to, you know, you're going to lose sight of all the important stuff that got you there in the first place. You know, so the mindset is going from hustler to operator. So from working in your business to on your business. So your job changes, right? It's not about the minutiae. Your job is to understand the process of what success looks like and how to manufacture success in a particular set of tasks, and then transfusing that or superimposing that onto someone else. The benefit of doing that is it's going to make onboarding a lot easier, because your culture is defined and you can train to the process and not the person. Because I'll tell you, if you don't have a process, you're driving yourself crazy training people. And it's like, oh my God, why can't this person just understand what comes easy to me? And I deal with this a lot. And it's like, you need flawless execution, because without flawless execution, everything's going to go into shambles or something like that. Right. So the way around that is, if you have a defined process, all you're doing is training to the process, and then you're coaching people along to then meet that standard. And you're going to find that you're going to have some imperfections in there. So those imperfections is where you're going to have your quality checks in there. So for a team, what I recommend, if you're, you know, you have a team and you're struggling with this issue, have a meeting with them and work with them to define the process. You want to work with them if they're already in the position, because people will become more engaged when they take part in the creation of the process. They own their accountability and they actually feel like they're building something. So this way, when you have your weekly team meetings, you're again, just holding them accountable to what they agreed to. And if it didn't work, you ask them why it didn't work and ask them to solution. And I'll tell you, I have not written like a correction plan or improved the process myself in years, because I believe that the solution lies within the mind of the person you hired. That's why you hired them. And if you don't feel confident that that person has the ability to figure things out on their own, then there's some other things that we need to look at. And it may be with yourself, right? Because as a leader, you always have to check yourself first, right? Mm-hmm. To see if it's something you're doing. So you check yourself and you see if there's something you're doing. If it's something that truly lies with them, then you have to work on the solution with them. If there's no solution, then you have to part ways in a good way and then start looking for the next one. There's a saying, and actually, Maggie, you had said this earlier, which is so true. Always be recruiting, mm-hmm. right? You always have
always
to keep
be
your
recruiting.
Eye. Yeah, you always have to keep your eye on the next talent for that position. You have to anticipate that they will be leaving. So you don't want to be stuck trying to figure it out when they give you their 2 weeks notice. If they're professional enough to do that, you want to make sure you're always looking for what you're going to need moving forward. This is going to help you develop them also, because when it comes time at the end of the year, doing your reviews, then you can help them develop in those areas so they can remain more marketable, and you're helping them to grow as you grow. So you see, this is not an expense. This is an investment. If your hire is an expense for you, something in the process is missing. So look at your processes, make sure everything is defined, that they can clearly understand what success looks like. And if you do that, you're going to find it easier to get everybody on track. And they, believe me, we got to give people more credit. They have the ability to figure out these things on their own, and they actually want to. It makes them feel more accomplished. Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And that's actually something that comes back to the leader, like you mentioned, because I know I found that in my own meetings, is I hadn't honed in on my process, and it was coming back to me, as I was like, why aren't you in my head figuring out what I want? And Esty can speak to this, is I think I tell people things. Yeah, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't tell them. And then I'm like, why isn't this done? And she's like, right, because you never told me that. Or did I send you that? No, you did not. Yeah. So it's all about the process and getting that straight. And all of a sudden, people are an investment because they perform so much better. You give them the tools they need, and they excel. Absolutely. So, yes.
Yeah. And I would add one more piece to that. If you don't do it already, invite pushback. It's the best thing you can do as a leader. Tell them to push back on you. If there's something that you feel that they're not doing, invite them to push back and tell you why you're wrong and explain it. But here's the caveat, and I always say this to anybody I lead: if you're going to come to me with a problem, I want two solutions with it. Because if you come to me with a problem, it's just another problem on my desk. I got enough. I got problems like up to here. So if you're going to come to me with a problem, bring two solutions with it, and if they, you know, we'll test them out. So again, this is a good practice to implement if you're not doing so already.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, this has been so good. Is there anything else you'd like to speak to? Because I would love to have you here all day.
There you go. Listen, I'd love it. Absolutely. just the last thing I would say, and you and I were talking about this before, it's really about operations, right? And this is for those of you yeah, this is for those of you, whether you, mostly for those of you who have teams, but if you don't have teams yet and you will be hiring, this is still relevant for you. Operations is key, right? It's more important than marketing. It's more important than sales, in my opinion. Why? Because your processes will bring prosperity. Mm-hmm. A good process that has a quality improvement built into it is going to make you a ton of money because it's less time that you have to invest retooling, re-explaining, rewording, and redoing, and focus on your zone of genius and what's going to really propel your business forward. You know, we were talking about some statistics from the National Health Institute, right? The NHI right. Institute. So processes is also save lives in the healthcare industry. Poor processes and poor communication were the number one and number two reasons of or causes of death in hospitals. You know, so good processes are not just nice to have; they're necessary for the health and wealth of your business and your customers and clients as well. If you look at the construction industry, which you and I were talking about, OSHA
yep.
has a ton of information on how the littlest lapse in process can actually get somebody killed. So it's important that you pay attention to it for the health and wealth of your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's actually the first thing that I did before I mm-hmm. even brought on an intern. Like before I brought anybody on is I worked on those processes. I worked on all of my handbooks. I worked on everything mm-hmm. before I did anything. And my husband was like, yeah, that's like, I can't believe that you are doing that before you bring anybody on, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, because if you don't have that in place, how does anybody know what they're accountable for? And then how you do business becomes your process if mm-hmm. you don't have one in place.
That's right. The way you do one thing, the way you do one yeah. thing is the way you do everything. Absolutely.
And that's unacceptable. So I did all of that before I placed my first ad for an intern. I had it all in place because I couldn't not.
Yeah.
So yeah. It doesn't matter if you are a solopreneur running it out of your bedroom. You should definitely start that process.
Absolutely.
So that way you know exactly how everything's going to be run.
Absolutely.
And it makes scalability so much easier.
Oh, yeah, that's that word, scalability.
Yep. So much easier. So thank you so much. Any other questions for Emilio before we jump off? So while I wait for some questions to come in or if there are any, the enrollment is open for the Extraordinary Entrepreneur Experience. And I did send out an email. Oh, Esther's so sweet. Everybody was hyping her up. She had some questions on her zone of genius. She is an artist.
Okay.
And she had some questions on her zone of genius. And she was joking around saying she wanted to buy a pill for one. And everybody hyped her up. She's an artist and she also plays piano. And she went live playing piano the other day. It was so good.
Awesome.
So yeah, this was an amazing session. I loved it. I sent out an email. If you're on my email list, if you're not, you need to get on it. But I went into detail about everything that is inside the experience. I will gladly hop on a call with anyone who has any questions because the bonuses are running out. And I am customizing the bonus if you don't want the branding. So feel free to hop in a DM with me. But Emilio, it was amazing. That was such a good session.
Good. I'm glad.
Such a good session. Like, I can't even tell you how good it was. So yeah. I would love to have you back anytime you want to be here. You are more than welcome. Open invite.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'd love to come back. Absolutely. Had a lot of fun. And anyone, if you have any questions for me after this, feel free to reach out. Yeah, you can find me via Emilio Sori on, you know, any of the social media platforms, Facebook.
Yeah. Instagram, well, what's your website? SD, can you type his website? I can't post comments.
So yeah. So my website, EmilioSoria.com. So real easy to remember.
Oh, that's really easy. So it's his name.
That's it. So yeah, my name.com. Yeah, I have more information there. And again, if you want to reach out to me, you could reach me on any of the social media platforms. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Facebook. So you can just search up my name there and feel free to connect if you have questions.
Oh my gosh. You are so amazing. Thank you so much. Cool. This was great.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye guys.
Take care.